Happy Monday, friends, and welcome back to the Mark Claire Show. Today, I've got a special presentation for you. That's a really nice way for me to say I'm re-airing an episode from another podcast. I was on the 2-Bit podcast with my friend Jason a few weeks ago, and we were talking about all sorts of things related to his ideas about the vengeful sun energy that is currently inhabiting our world. And we filtered that a bit through one of our favorite passions, that is professional wrestling. So I'm just going to warn you right now, in before I hear any complaints that this is all about wrestling, I'm telling you right now, first 20 or 30 minutes, it's a lot of inside baseball, a lot of pro wrestling talk. But I promise you, we do get into larger issues affecting the world at large. So I encourage you to tune in and check it out. But I've warned you, so if you just don't want to hear about pro wrestling, no worries, tune out. I won't hold it against you. You can come back next week. We can still be friends. It's all good. Another thing you can do in the meantime, though, while you're waiting, is to check out my friend Stephen Fox at foxandsons.com and his fantastic coffee. Stephen is the number one and the only sponsor of this show. He is my sponsor for the remainder of the year at a minimum, although I have a feeling this relationship is going to last even longer, but we have locked in a deal for the rest of the year. And that year and that deal includes the MCS discount of 18% off when you go to foxandsons.com, foxandsons.com. Use discount code MCS for 18% off your order. Get yourself a bag or two. Try some stuff out. You're going to love it. I promise you that. Fox and Sons, great sponsor of the show. And patrons, premium supporters of the show, you can find out all the ways to support the show over at markclaire.com, markclaire.com. Premium supporters, you're actually going to hear from Stephen Fox later this week. He's going to come on for a little bonus show with me. We're going to talk about all sorts of things, including my emergence from libertarianism, which sort of came around the same time as Stephen Fox did, as well as looking back on a little semi-inebriated podcast that has sort of taken on some lore of its own in that field. So some of you may know what I'm talking about. Others may not. Either way, Stephen and I are going to dive right into that and a whole host of other topics and a big bonus show later this week for premium supporters. Again, check out all the ways you can support the show over at markclaire.com. And of course, follow my friend Jason over at the 2-Bit Podcast YouTube channel. He's doing great stuff over there. Enjoy this conversation with myself and Jason Moronchuk.
Ladies and gentlemen, mesdames, messieurs, welcome to At the End of the Day. I am your host, Jason Moronchuk, and with me today, finally, the mighty Mark Claire from the Mark Claire Show. Hi, Mark.
Finally, the Mark has come back to whatever we're calling the show nowadays. Can't keep track.
you got your fingers many pots, cookie jars.
You could say things. That. Irons in the fire might be the phrase.
Irons in the fire.
If you don't want to keep I got some irons cooking.
Your fingers sticky. Mark, this is like we've been trying to do this now for. We did a show last year, pretty much around the same time.
We did a WrestleMania show. Yeah, it was right. It would be around the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're back here to talk wrestling because we're wrestling geeks, wrestling nerds, and I think that's a good thing, especially for men in their mid to late 40s.
I think it's a great thing. I think it's the best thing you can do with your free time. Personally,
it's the only thing that makes sense to me these days. Actually, Mark, let's start with that. Where did your love of wrestling start? Give me a beginning, middle, and end here. I know you just talked about this with Cyprian on your show this week.
Yeah, we didn't get into too much of my own background in that conversation, but we did have a surprisingly in-depth talk about wrestling, more so than he was a lot more knowledgeable than I realized he was on the subject. But for myself, I started in probably, I want to say my first wrestling memory is the tournament. I think it was a tape actually that a friend of mine rented, and it was a tape of, I think it had WrestleMania 4. So it had this whole tournament, you know, where they crowned the new champion and it's where Macho Man became the champion and yada, yada, yada. But somewhere, I don't know if it was the same mix of tapes. I don't think it was the same tape, but there's also a match. I believe the match was Hulk Hogan and Gene Okerlund against I want to say Don Morocco and Mr. Fuji. And I distinctly remember this training video of Hulk Hogan training Gene Okerlund to be a wrestler. And that's my first real memory of wrestling. But for me, it was, you know, I spent a lot of time growing up. I was not technically an only child. I have an older sister, but she was 12 years older than me. So at the age of 5, she moved out of the house and went off to college to do her own thing. So I was sort of...
When she was 5 years old?
When I was five. When I was 5 and she was 17 or 18 or whatever. She's not that bright. I mean, come on. So I was kind of like an only child. So I was always finding ways to entertain myself, and wrestling was one way that entertained me eternally. It didn't just entertain me in the sense that I could wake up on Saturday morning and Sunday morning to watch WWF at the time, WWF Superstars, as well as WWF Challenge. I think it was on Sundays. There was also WCW shows that I found if I just hop channels, I could usually get one of those right after or right before. But it didn't end there, because I could get the action figures and then I could create my own storyline lines with all those same guys that I saw on TV. So if this sounds nerdy, it's because it was, but I was 5, so leave me alone, okay? But that's where it all started.
Yeah, the genius of Vince McMahon to really understand that wrestling is generational, I think was the real act of brilliance. What's crazy to me is that there was no merch in wrestling before Superstar Billy Graham. Superstar Billy Graham was the first guy who started selling t-shirts.
I didn't know.
In like the 70s. Yeah. Before that, there just wasn't merch. I don't know why. But when Vince McMahon Jr. got in, he just said, yeah. No, also because he was a big fan growing up of Superstar Billy Graham. Or, I mean, he probably was a young man at the time. And I think that's why he made Hogan so much like Superstar in many ways, because there's a lot of like crossover there, and Vince just like marketing, man. Like,
I mean, to say the least, they're almost the same guy.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Well, they didn't have the boa. I think
Jesse got the boa in the
when they
divided Billy Graham into parts. You know, Hogan got the hair and the muscles. Well, I mean, Jesse had the muscles too, but
I think Jesse would have been the Hulk, because when you were talking to Cyprian, you were talking about how the role is really what we're going after. Terry Bollea just filled the role and became Hulk Hogan. Anyone could have technically filled that role, technically, anyways. Right. I think that Jesse was kind of maybe one of the forerunners for that, but this didn't work out for a whole bunch of reasons, probably just because Jesse being Jesse, but
he was definitely on that track. I mean, he did retire pretty early because he developed some kind of blood disease. I forget the exact specifics, but there's some reason he retired and went to announcing very, very early on in like the, I think it was like the mid 80s. So Jesse was never actually that big when it came to a wrestler. He made much more of his name as a commentator. And then of course, you know, we can get into the politics. I mean, that is actually something that it didn't, it is kind of in many ways what connected me from wrestling to politics, because Jesse winning the governor, I mean, I knew him as the heel commentator and sort of had that love, you know, when you love the bad guy kind of thing with him, and to see him kind of become governor and, you know, buck the two-party system, I thought was such a cool thing at the time. And it is the first time I started looking at politics a little more closely.
Who do you think was better in your childhood? Was it Jesse Ventura as a commentator or Bobby the Brain?
Oh, don't make me choose. It's so hard. I've honestly put probably way more thought into this than you might imagine, than any healthy adult male probably should. But
you're talking to me, Mark.
I'm in a man who obsesses
over like just silly things. Please go ahead.
I think the answer to this, I'm going to give a little bit of a political answer. So I think it's situation dependent, because I think it's all about the combination. To me, the best combinations are, I love Jesse with Vince and I love Bobby with Gorilla. So, you know, maybe that's a bit of a cop-out answer, but to me, it's really a lot about who they're with.
No, that is the absolute correct answer. That is the correct smart Mark answer. I'm going to be saying smart Mark a lot for people who aren't familiar with wrestling.
And I'm Mark, so smart. I am literally the smart Mark. I should start going by that for my wrestling.
You are the smartest Mark I know, sir. That's just Mark with a C, I should say. Let's caveat that so no one gets butthurt. We're going to get into eventual sun with this, but let's talk politics and the outside of the ring stuff that's going on, especially WWE right now. And I think we have to start with Vincent Kennedy McMahon, who has gotten himself into a little bit of trouble. a whole lot of trouble. Actually, he's under federal investigation, I think, or that's going to be starting to kick off soon. For people who don't know what I'm talking about, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, of course, was he got the business from his father.
I love that you respectfully say his all three names, by the way. I appreciate you know, that. I'm sure he does too.
I'm sure he does too. Hey, we got to give
him
whatever pronouns, pal, whatever respect we can give him would be an interesting choice. So he gets the business from his father, but buys it for like $1 million, pays off him and his father's business associates, takes over the business, of course, makes the WWF into the phenomenal thing that we know today with Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania, et cetera, et cetera. Here's a nice little trivia quiz. This is how I got introduced to wrestling, was through MTV, because it was the War That Settled the Score. That was the one I remember. And that was a precursor to WrestleMania with Roddy Piper getting into a tiff with Cyndi Lauper and that whole faction.
That was the whole rock and wrestling vibe they were going with for a while.
Yep. And that was a cartoon show and a whole bunch of other stuff. Anyways, I'm just saying this because I like to be a clever little boy sometimes, and this is just proving my bona fides. Anyways, so Vincent Kennedy McMahon takes over the business, creates this massive juggernaut worth billions of dollars. It's just sold, and of course now it's part of TKO. Signed with Endeavor, so it's partnership with the UFC, all these big beautiful things. Signed a $5 billion deal with Netflix over the next, we don't know how long, probably 20-year deal. But what was revealed back in 2020 was that Vince had a whole bunch of NDAs that he paid out of the company dime, and one of those NDAs, at least, there was a stop payment on it from this lady who has now revealed all the dirty little secrets of what was going on in her and Vince's relationship. And by the looks of it, it looks like Vince and John Laurinaitis, his right-hand man, were into some things like, I don't know what we can say on YouTube, grape and coercion. Let's say a little bit of, if one was to look comely, one might groom oneself or others, you know, as the case may be. So that's a little bit revelatory.
It's a tough thing because it's one of those things where like, there's that part of me that's like, maybe I should be a little skeptical of allegations against a billionaire at this time of transition where there's a good number of people that might want to see him out the door. Maybe I should be a little skeptical. And it's certainly possible that some of these allegations are trumped up a little bit or, you know, hyped up more. Maybe they're, but at the end of the day, it sounds very much like Vince McMahon, the person and the character that we've all gotten to know in whatever way over the years. People that know him say those sound like his texts. There are texts in the document. And let's be honest, I don't think any of this would surprise anybody if it was 100% true, because we've seen the Mr. McMahon character doing incredibly but depraved stuff on air. And part of what we talked about in that episode with Cyprian, but I think I always told myself, well, this is just he's just brilliantly playing this character by doing all these despicable, disgusting, at times like incestuous type things with like involving Stephanie McMahon, his wife. I mean, stuff, but you always just tell yourself, damn, he's a good heel. And now it's like, well, or was this just his character brought to life just like so many wrestlers are?
Yeah, it was interesting because that was around the time that I stopped watching. I watched it during the Monday Night War Wars. I was actually more of a WCW stan a bit until it really started getting too awful to watch. And then started watching WWE because a lot of those guys transitioned over. I was a Benoit fan, Jericho fan. It's probably why I like AEW so much now. And it was around that time when the storyline started getting really kind of perverse. I was like, and I was a young man who, I mean, I was no angel by any means, but even that I was like, no, I'm good. This is the kiss my ass thing was like, no. Okay. Like you're having grown old men kiss your ass. That seems weird. I don't like this.
Yeah. Now it seems that especially that sort of like tyrannical commandeering boss part seems like that's a very accurate portrayal. And then the sexual depravity and stuff, maybe it remains to be seen how much, but either way, it certainly seems to be a reflection of the real character, probably more so than anyone even really imagined.
But to your point, there is a political angling on this. Now, I tend to think most people don't have conspiracies. They just have good prep. So having Vince around was starting to become a liability, especially if they want to take the company and 10x it even more with Netflix deals and whatsoever, which is kind of weird. Would you think like we don't, Vince is too depraved for Netflix. The same streaming service like brought us Cuties. I'm like, okay.
From the makers of Squid Game and Cuties, I don't know about that guy.
Right. So now we have a situation where we have, so Vince is ousted from the board. He steps down, fired, whatever, under these allegations. He's under possible federal investigation. Things are getting pretty intense for him. To deflect from that, they bring in The Rock. They bring back The Rock, who Dwayne The Rock Johnson started off his career in WWE, has become one of the most highly paid, famous Hollywood stars of the last decade, or maybe 15 years. And is now brought back to go back to wrestling and is installed as a chairman of the board figure. Do you think this is kayfabe or do you think this is real? Or do you think it's like a Jack Tunney kind of situation?
Isn't that what makes it all so interesting at the end of the day, right? is how much
all
of
the
it
above
is real? Because as all of this is happening, as Vince comes out the same week that The Rock is brought onto the board, like you said, it's not really conspiracies as much as things moving in certain directions and people being ready to move in certain directions. But you know, it's bringing in The Rock is interesting because, you know, The Rock tends to return to wrestling when his own career is sputtering a little bit, not to say he's not doing okay for himself. He's doing well, but there was a little controversy around the Maui thing. Black Adam really bombed. He found himself on the out of DC. He hasn't really had a big hit in the last few years. So maybe in some way, I think this might be The Rock trying to give himself a little more juice again, because the same thing did happen around, I want to say it was 2010, 2011. The Rock's career was kind of sputtering a little bit. He called up Vince, said, let's do some business. He came back, did the two matches with John Cena, did a couple with CM Punk, and then he became the highest paid actor in Hollywood. I'm not saying there's for about 6 years. So I'm not saying there's a direct connection, but maybe there is a little bit. It certainly didn't hurt, and it seemed to have given some juice to his own career. So I'm curious just how much now, of course, The Rock is, he's in his mid to late 50s now. I think he's 51. Probably has a good number of years as an action star in him, but nonetheless, he is also a businessman. He has interest in the XFL, which is now merged with another football league. And I'm sure all of this is, you know, there are legitimate regular business reasons for him to do a lot of this stuff too, but it's interesting how much of it blends with the real life storyline, because as The Rock is coming in, there are rumors that he has brought in his own writer, Brian Gerwitz, that was a writer for many years. There's rumors that he, as part of the deal to bring him on the board, was that he would be wrestling in the main event of, or in one of the main events of WrestleMania 40. So that plays directly into the storyline, whether intentionally or not, of Cody Rhodes, literally in probably one of the stupidest segments I've ever seen in television in wrestling history. He just walked up, told Roman Reigns, yeah, I won the Royal Rumble. I'm coming for your title. I'm going to take everything from you. I'm just not going to do it at WrestleMania. And here's The Rock. And everybody kind of, you know, a lot of the wrestling fanhood, as you know, kind of wigged out.
For the benefit of folks who don't know what the hell
yeah, this is very in the weeds. So yeah, please do stop.
This is a special episode. I'm gonna put this out as a special episode. It's like its own category of
you
geek.
Do not have to do
if
homework.
You don't know what. Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, God bless you. You gotta go do your own homework. I will ask you, Mark, to do me a favor. Lay it out a little bit, because I actually stopped watching. I went through a period of time. People who don't know this, and why would you? Mark and I communicate quite regularly about wrestling. We just fill up DMs, especially around times of like a pay-per-view or.
My wife thought I was having an affair. I had to shower. Don't worry, honey. It's just wrestling talk. She's like, oh, okay, that's normal.
Just paragraphs, like no.
Okay,
we get a little obsessive about certain things. I went through a period of time late last year where I was thinking about doing a wrestling thing or something like that. I was considering it. And so I started consuming like everything, all the AEW shows, all the WWE shows, all the pay-per-views, and like an insane amount of the podcast. Cause I was just studying and like thinking about, okay, what are they doing? How are they doing this? It almost broke me. Like it literally almost broke me mentally and spiritually. Because at some point,
you went on wrestling overload.
Oh, it's you don't take all the red pills, man. Like, you just take one. Exactly. You don't take the whole bottle.
There's a reason they come in pill form.
Single doses, one per day. So I've checked out a little bit. I'm still checked in enough to know what's going on. And I just kind of caught up with the road to WrestleMania stuff. You've been paying more attention to this. So I'm going to kick it over to you. Explain Cody Rhodes and explain this horrible, really stupid storyline that we're into now.
Yeah, it's either a horribly stupid. I mean, I think even if it's all planned from the get go, it was executed in a stupid way. And a lot of people are saying there may be still a big payoff, and I'm looking forward to an interesting payoff. So, but I'm pretty sure the payoff, whatever it may come, is a pivot of some sort, much like Daniel Bryan, to get further into the weeds of people that might not know. About 10 years ago, there was a wrestler named Daniel Bryan, huge fan favorite. Vince never really saw him as a top WrestleMania kind of headlining kind of guy. But the storyline really, and the fan support really told everybody this guy should be in the main event this year. Instead, now just to give all the background here, we're going to go deep. The winner of the Royal Rumble every year, theoretically, sometimes there's twists and turns along the way in the story, but theoretically gets to pick a championship and be in the main event of WrestleMania and fight for that championship. So that year, when everyone thought Daniel Bryan's a shoo-in to be in the main event, he wasn't even in the Royal Rumble, and fans just were in an uproar. Dave Batista won that Royal Rumble because Vince, you know, movie star. All right, he's a movie star. Fans are going to love him coming back. They didn't love him coming back. They hated him coming back, mostly because they saw him as a Hollywood star taking place of the fan favorite, which actually propelled Daniel Bryan to even more popularity. And they did pivot the storyline to actually have him overcome Batista and Randy Orton and Triple H all on the same night. And it was one of the greatest nights. I was there live for the culmination of that story, and it was one of the greatest nights ever, and a lot of people give them credit for it, and they do deserve credit for the pivot, but we need to also recognize it was a pivot. It was not the plan. They were just smart enough to realize that sticking to the plan actually would have been a disaster, and I think they wanted to avoid something that happened about 10 years earlier. I'm just going to keep going back in history here, where they had a big match plan between Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg. The fans were not happy about it. I was at this event too as well, and the fans just booed the match. They didn't boo, you know, the boo, wrestlers getting booed is great. That's fine. They just want a reaction. But you really don't want the match itself booed. You don't want displeasure at the existence of what is being portrayed on the screen. It's a very different kind of boo. So I think that's what they wanted to avoid 10 years ago. I promise it's all going to tie back. And I think they also wanted to avoid that today with a potential Rock and Roman Reigns main event. Now, just to continue with the background for the newbies out there, Roman Reigns has been the champion for almost, I think, over 3 years now, has not lost in that whole time, is surpassing records, is actually coming up on Hulk Hogan's record potentially. Meanwhile, on the other side, in the storyline, Cody Rhodes won the Royal Rumble last year, had the shot at WrestleMania, kind of got screwed out of the title and lost the match. And then basically this entire year, his entire story has literally been how he has to finish the story. And pretty much finishing his story is finishing his dad's story. And this can kind of tie into the conversation we wanted to get into. His dad, Dusty Rhodes, was like the working man's wrestler who never really got the big one. He did win the title one night, but it was taken from him in what's infamously known as a Dusty finish, where they send the fans home happy one night, but then the next day they say, for whatever reason, an interference, a referee, we reverse the decision. So the fans that night go home happy. The next day, he never really had the championship. So that's kind of the storyline of Cody, that he's not just finishing his own story, but he's actually just sort of finishing the story of his father that his father never got to finish as well. So it goes through the whole year with this storyline. Intentionally doesn't even go for the other world championship, stating, no, I'm waiting for Roman Reigns. I mean, they're very on the nose about where this is going. Then he wins the Royal Rumble. Now, this is where things get pretty interesting, because supposedly the deal with The Rock happened before the Royal Rumble. This is very important information. So, now, this is, again, where storyline crosses over, because Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, is, Paul Levesque, whatever you want to call him now. I think they just billed him as Paul Triple H Levesque, actually, on the last show. Again, blending those lines even more, almost admitting, yes, there's this character person, but there's also this real person who does have creative control and is on your screen as that person as well. So there's a lot of blending of the lines, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that now, too, because, honestly, I don't really know where the lines draw, and I feel like I'm a pretty tuned in wrestling fan. What happened basically is a repeat of 10 years ago. Is Cody in the storyline won the Royal Rumble, except not, you know, 10 years ago, they shunted Bryan off to the side. This is different. They actually were propelling him to the main event until The Rock stepped in, until they made this deal. And apparently he was just going to, in storyline, for some reason, hand his main event over to The Rock. Now, there are parts of me that thinks it is silly enough that you almost got to wonder if The Rock always wanted to come in as a heel and always wanted to do this. But I do have a hard time believing that. It does seem like they really hyped up they had this tease for the head of the table thing where Rock came on Raw, said, you know, should I sit at the head of the table and like drop the mic? And it seemed very clear to me that in The Rock's mind, the match was The Rock and Roman Reigns. Only problem is the storyline, the one that's been going on for 2 years, really, that all the fans have been behind, and you know, really should have been Cody doing it. So in the actual storyline now, they held a press, and in reality, they held a press conference. Again, this blurs the lines even more because a press conference is often seen as the real part. Even sometimes within wrestling, we have the show, but then we have the real press conference where real reporters, who are often put there by WWE, ask real life questions about the wrestlers, not as much the character. So I think this blurring of the lines is very much where our culture is as well. It's very indicative of our culture, and it's very much very WWE, but it's more wrestling than I've ever seen, because wrestling has always been about pulling the hood over the eyes of the mark, about fooling the market and thinking what they're seeing is real, or at least getting them to suspend their disbelief enough to get invested in the product and spend money. That's really the goal. And the fact that they're having this level of success with even people like me that follow this stuff religiously, I don't know if it's impressive because some of this may have happened by accident, but the fact that they're leaning into it and playing upon the rumors that Rock is trying to push his control around and that Triple H really wanted to continue with the Cody storyline, those are the rumors, and they're very credible. I mean, it's quite possible that that's really what happened, because The Rock really was planned, promised a match. I doubt in his mind the match was whatever they end up doing, some sort of weird, sounds like they're going to have some kind of tag match or something involving him and the Cody match. But the pivot has been brilliant. So I will say that it's produced really compelling TV with The Rock coming in, sort of embracing the Hollywood Rock. And I think we're going to see him embrace more of the corporate Rock character. They haven't played on it as much, but they did show him bossing around Triple H a little bit at the press conference without saying it so much, but kind of playing on the knowledge that we all have in real life that he actually, in real life hierarchy, he's actually above Triple H right now, because Triple H isn't even on the board for all intents and purposes. He's just an employee. So I hope that cleared it up instead of confusing things more, because it's a lot to take in if you don't follow this stuff, bro.
Look, man, this show, I should have started off by saying this show is for wrestling marks, and pretty much wrestling marks only, or people who are like on the fence about getting in.
People and, who like hearing smart people talk about stuff, because we'll get some interesting points.
But of course, but I mean, that goes without most of that saying. To address the smart people in the room actually right now, thank you very much for subscribing, liking, sharing, and doing all the things that you can do to help this show grow. We've been experiencing exponential growth over the last few months. We've
been putting out bangers.
I appreciate it, man. I do try. We just was on Buck Johnson's show, showing up on Tommy's show. There's a whole bunch of other stuff going on over the next month or so. So keep an ear and eye out, and we will keep delivering as many bangers as I can produce in any given week. I really do appreciate each and every one of you. Think about signing up to our $2 membership, Friends Not Feds. On YouTube, we have a Patreon and a Substack and all those other links in the description below. And again, I appreciate each and every one of you. Okay. Something that came up. So here's a thought that came up during your explanation, which was expertly done, by the way. I couldn't have done.
Thanks. I hope it wasn't too convoluted for those that don't
know. No, it was perfect.
I included like three different decades in there. So.
Hey, well, these things aren't simple, right? Like, none of this is simple.
They're not.
There's a term in wrestling called kayfabe. And what kayfabe essentially means is, it's the act, right? It is the work. People think that work means work rate, or something that you're doing in the ring, which is part of it. But the work is convincing the audience that the fiction is real. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, what kayfabe was is that wrestlers would act out their roles. The Undertaker was one of the best examples of it. He lived as the Undertaker for a very long time. Like, if he was out in public, he presented himself as much of the character as he could without, you know, being arrested as a dead man, evil person who buries people for fun. You know, wrestlers, there's tons of stories in the past where, you know, wrestlers be at a bar and someone comes up and says, this is fake, and they would beat the crap out of them, or that the baby faces, the good guys and the heels, would be in separate locker rooms and wouldn't go out together or be seen together. There was actually a huge kerfuffle that ended essentially the Iron Sheik's run and
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan, because they
hated
were out
enemies.
Partying. Yes.
Pulled over with
hated
cocaine.
Enemies. Well,
hey, sometimes you got to hash it out with your enemies in another way, you know, if you've just fought too much. But yeah, that was a big one in the 80s. They were, you know, so supposed to be good guys and bad guys. They don't intermingle. They hate each other. And they were sort of rivals. And then they were arrested, getting pulled over for doing cocaine in a car together. So clearly they got along.
I think they got more in trouble for getting caught together than they did for the cocaine.
I think you're right, actually. I think you're actually right. I mean, maybe a slap on the wrist for the coke and then, you know, a big hit to the career for breaking kayfabe.
Right. So this all being said, I think they're almost, what you're saying, is blurring the lines between character and reality and admitting that there's a character being played, but, you know, maybe some with real dramas in the background, affecting storyline, etc. It's almost instituting this new inverted kayfabe, where it's not so much the character that The Rock has to play that character all the time. He can be Dwayne Johnson sometimes, or The Rock sometimes, depending on what he needs to be. But you're blurring all these other lines, which is kind of what kayfabe really is. It's a blurring of the lines, and it seems to be a more modern interpretation of it, especially when you have things like social media and all this other stuff where it's very difficult to understand, even with shows like this, right? It's hard to maintain your authenticity when you got a camera in your face.
I mean, we joke, and I like to say, because it's true to an extent, I do try to be a podcaster. I try to be as authentic as I can be. But the truth is, when it's kind of like the observer effect. Like, when you know you're being watched, you're just not going to act exactly the same as you would. You know, you and I having a beer in a bar together in a private conversation is just going to come across. It's going to be a different thing than us doing a podcast together. Even the conversation we had before the podcast is going to sound different, because we're in a little bit of a different tone. We're kind of maybe just talking in a different way, and we have to sort of hype our voices a tiny bit more when we're being, you know, on a podcast. And even that sort of, now you are seeing the presented version. So I guess any kind of, you know, entertainment media, it's always there. It's just that in wrestling, we discuss the blurring a lot more, but there's always a character being presented. It doesn't mean we're being disingenuous, but it's just true that Mark Clare, host of a podcast, is not exactly the same as Mark Clare, who just walks around, you know, during the day. He's close, you know, I don't go out, but but there's still a difference.
Yeah. So I think we can easily criticize bigger names, or you watch someone like a Russell Brand or some of that, or, you know, a Joe Rogan, and a lot of their presentation, especially Joe Rogan, is based on authenticity. But you can't get that big and not have a persona. Like, you have to have a persona just to protect you. Right. Like, right. You know, they're criticizing the character Joe Rogan, not the human Joe Rogan.
I mean, that was Hulk Hogan's big defense. If you remember when he got in all this trouble for saying the N-word on a sex tape, a private sex tape, and this is a whole thing, and then he had a defamation suit. But a lot of what came out in his testimony is that, what was he saying? He was saying, like, the character, I don't know if it was about that specific case, but this is something that Hogan said in some of his legal documents anyway. He said, there's the character Hulk Hogan, and then there's Terry Bollea. Like, the character Hulk Hogan might say crazy things, you know, the character Hulk, and I'm always in character. So that's kind of his offense, is that, like, I'm always in character. I'm always playing a role. So whatever is said is, you know, trademark and copyright Hulk Hogan. Essentially, Terry Bollea doesn't exist. This is kind of what he's saying. He's not available to commit crimes, or not their crimes, but you know what I mean?
He was just being a heel when he was having extramarital sex with Bubba the Love Sponge's wife.
It's a heel move, right? While using the N-word, yeah.
Well, yeah. Vengeful Son. Talked about this on Buck Johnson's show. I've talked about it on my show quite a bit. I have an article coming out this week about the Vengeful Son. It is the term I am dubbing to this incoming spirit of the age. I've said that the previous two spirits going back to the end of the 19th century to somewhere in the 1950s, that was instantiated by the tyrannical father. Then from the 1960s until relatively recently, that would be the devouring mother. And now we're entering into the ventral son. I'm using spirit here. People can access this idea in multiple dimensions. They can either go full spiritual, as in these are extra dimensional beings or intelligences that are affecting us. These can be egregores or a psychological effect, a zeitgeist, if we want to get all German philosophical about it. Any way you want to conceptualize it, essentially what these spirits I'm saying do is that they act upon people collectively, and they begin to create almost narrative. They give, a form to the narratives that will be indicative over a period of time. And these things seem to be lasting around 60 to 70 years. So buckle up, buttercup. This might go on for a bit. With the tyrannical father, I'm saying the spirit, you can really see it throughout the world wars and the Depression era. I look at my grandfather's generation, men who were raised from violence or had violence around them all the time, both in war theaters and I think at home. And was always a bit of a distancing. Like a lot of men from that era, you can almost see that sort of social PTSD in some ways that's indicative. With the devouring mother, of course, we have the rise of feminism. We have civil rights. We have a lot of these sort of epochs happening, which seems to be a lot more like bring all the suffering upon me. I will protect my children. But because it's a bit psychotic and inverted, it's sort of like I'll protect them by destroying them, or I protect them by kind of subduing them in some ways, in some cases, killing them. With the ventral son, I'm saying that the overriding spirit of this will be a spirit of total violence. So it won't always just be kinetic. It'll be seen in many different forms. I bring up the Game Stonks example of where they were holding this group of Anons decided to short the Robin Hood, a hedge fund essentially, which had shorted Game Stonk. They decided to short the hedge fund, and they essentially put the hedge fund out of business. And during that period, they were talking to one of the organizers, one of the more prominent people there, and saying, look, if you keep holding this money, you'll lose it all over time. And he was like, I don't care. That's not the point. The point is to hurt them, the hedge funds, because like those are the people who hurt my dad back in 2008 during the financial crisis. Mm-hmm. These are the kind of things that I think you're going to see more and more and more of. And we're already seeing it happening. Elon Musk goes and tells Disney to go fuck themselves. I'm seeing like Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the Canadian Conservative Party, the opposition, just said WTF, those literal words, in a speech about one of Trudeau's stupidness. Like it's happening all over the place. And once you kind of see it, you can't unsee it. How does this will relate back to wrestling is directly with Cody Rhodes. And you brought up a really interesting point, and I'll kick back to you, Mark. Let's see what you can do with this. Because Cody Rhodes is the son of a plumber. He's the son of a plumber, right? yeah. Dusty Rhodes was a right. really fabled a promoter and wrestler back from the 70s, essentially, is when he rose to fame. He has, you know, some of the greatest promos of the Hard Times promos. Hard times on the Dusty Rhodes family. Funky like a monkey, baby.
That's pretty good. You got some talent there.
I got some talents up my sleeves and the short sleeves, baby. Baby, they're falling out.
Can you do the line?
Place.
You know, a job's going to take your computer, daddy. That's my favorite line.
A job's going to take your computer, daddy.
A computer's going to take your job. Job's not going to. Now maybe
computer's
going to
take your dog.
In Soviet Russia, job take computer.
Don't make me do my macho. So Cody Rhodes, son of Dusty Rhodes, fabled promoter who was going through some hard times of his own in real life, gets hired by the WWE by Vince. Vince puts him in polka dots, makes him a bit of a clown show. While he was there, and then he kind of does his run and gets out and goes and does his own things after that. Cody's brother Dustin comes in and is put in as Goldust, a effeminate, essentially homosexual character, and played up that way. And then Cody comes in and his first run is pretty much garbage.
Handsome
and has
Cody
now been
Rhodes.
Brought in.
He was. At least he was handsome. At least he wasn't, you know, they didn't make him as effeminate as Goldust, but we would get there too.
I approve of I approve of his mustache. I wanted to bring that look back. So now flash forward, Cody comes back after a run with AEW and is now being pushed as the next big giant baby face of all baby faces to eclipse Hulk Hogan and all the rest of it. Man, he kisses babies. He eats only Wonder Bread. He's just the nicest, goodest guy there ever was, nicest, goodest guy. And of course keeps getting screwed. So with that all said, there's my little monologue because I do like to talk. Mark, take it away.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just kind of occurred to me because I've seen you talk about the Vengeful Stunt stuff, and it really just hit me, like, when I was describing what's going on with Cody and the storyline and how with The Rock coming in right now as the not just the character The Rock, but also as Dwayne The Rock Johnson Boardman. And it's funny because even as part of this deal, he also reacquired the rights because that the name The Rock is actually owned by WWE, has been this whole time. That's why in the movies, really? He's billed as Dwayne Johnson. Sometimes he's able to be Dwayne The Rock Johnson because it's like a nickname, but he's never billed as The Rock. He's never been billed as The Rock because he's not The Rock. Well, he is now. Now he, as part of this deal, he acquired the rights to the actual name The Rock. So he can actually go around calling himself The Rock, this, The Rock, that now. So that's part of this deal, which again, we're blurring the lines even more here because now he is this corporate character. Yes, he's the corporate character. He's Dwayne the Johnson, but he is also The Rock, and he is seemingly both in storyline and in real life trying to take a spotlight away from someone, not only just someone that fans have been rooting for, an underdog, but someone who he captures that Vengeful Son energy that you just laid out, because this is generational. This is not like you pointed out with the GameStop thing. He wasn't getting revenge for himself. He was getting revenge for his father and what happened to him in the 2008 crash. I mean, these are 2008 economically, it's pretty much something everybody refers to. These are like psychological traumas that are incurred on society, and they affect people, going back 9/11 being one as well. People, you know, just like there are people who wanted revenge for 9/11, there are people who wanted revenge for 2008. And maybe 9/11 revenge takes the form of bombs and whatnot overseas. But 2008 collapse revenge takes the form of the GameStop thing and whatnot. So, but Cody is capturing that energy perfectly because in the storyline, his character is kind of getting screwed and pushed out of the spotlight. Meanwhile, in real life, his dad really did kind of get screwed. He never really had the world championship run. He really should have. I mean, he was arguably the most popular wrestler at many times. His mind was so brilliant that he was put in charge of booking. He was put in charge of NXT to show to raise up the new wrestlers. So Cody is trying to, in both real life and storyline, which is again what makes all of this so brilliant, is because it is true to the extent that people are going to feel that real emotion when he wins, because it's not only a great storyline, it's a real one. And when you see Cody shedding a tear when he holds that championship up, I mean, that's going to be a real tear, you know, but it's going to be a tear that is a tear coming from the character of Cody Rhodes and from the real life.
Today's episode is sponsored by Fox & Sons Coffee. And let me just tell you, Steven of Fox & Sons, he is not just an advertiser. He has been a supporter of this show from day one. And frankly, since before day one, because he came over with me from the old Lions and Liberty days. So true fan of the show. He started this company, Fox & Sons, out of his love for coffee and really out of wanting to further bond with his sons and spend time with him, just like he shared time with his father drinking coffee. He also gets to teach his sons about entrepreneurship and business through this endeavor. So I'm so happy to have Steven and really his whole family, the Fox and the Sons, the whole gang, as a supporters and sponsors of this show. Not only that, his beans are so high quality, fresh. Look, I just got two new bags right here. I got the Mexican and my favorite, the Den Blend Dark. The beans are super high quality, fresh and sourced from small organic farms, fair trade. None of this GMO garbage. They're all small batch roasted. This is high quality stuff. Subscriptions are by far the best way to get your coffee. I have a couple subscriptions going, but that is the way to go. You never run out that way. I never run out. I always have my supply of Fox & Sons. So I want you to head over to foxandsons.com. Put in your order today. They ship fast. They ship now through the end of February. Also, by the way, you're going to get free shipping on any order over $37.99. By the way, while you're there, use discount code MCS to get 18% off any order over $25. Stephen Fox, is a great man, a great friend, great supporter of the show. I encourage you to check out his coffee over at foxandsons.com.
I don't even know what his real name is. If it's whatever, I think Runnels was their real last name. Maybe it's Cody. It's probably Cody Runnels. I think Cody is his real name. Point being, those at some point the character and the sort of and the real life person merge or become indistinguishable. But that is exactly what makes it so effective, and why I think wrestling is going to be even. Business deals and stuff aside, I mean, just the way they're approaching storylines, if this is part of the new pivot, I think it's just going to make wrestling more effective and more popular if they're going to be able to capture that Vengeful Son energy as they're doing so effectively again. Whether intentional or not, sometimes these things just play out the way they need to play out. So I don't even know if it's the brilliance of WWE as much as it is the spirit of the age acting, it's influencing its us, I guess you could say, as you kind of laid out.
Yeah, like I said before, it's the zeitgeist, the spirit, whatever you want to call it. You can't avoid it. You can't really control it. It's going to affect you and everybody else around you. The only thing you can do is try to be aware of it and mitigate it. What I've said, the danger about all these things is it's going to feel good. Like when vengeance starts happening, and depending on who the vengeance is brought against. I think for right wingers, and I think things are going to start swinging to the right pretty dramatically. We're starting to see that in Alabama. We're starting to see that in a few other places around the world. We're starting to see that certainly in Russia. It's going to be a right wing future. And as it veers into the right wing, anyone who's already on there is going to start rejoicing a lot of things. And some of those things will be good. And some of those things will not be good. And you have to be able to discern between the two and not, the spirit will be there. It depends on how much you want to feed it and how much you want to accept it and how much you want to act from it. That's going to be the tricky part.
Right. The world will be experiencing it regardless. And you can either sort of maybe be aware of it, aware enough to recognize its influence on you. And maybe with that awareness, you can regulate yourself a bit, or you can be completely captured. You can be the one of the people with the pitchforks,
Yeah, or sit back and kind of watch as the world burns.
Or pitchforks might just be YouTube, might just be like Twitter comments nowadays. That might be the modern pitchfork with a lot of this stuff, but you can be captured by the energy, I guess, is the point.
Exactly, yeah. I think part of the thing that the Vengeful Son will do is attack the last 120 years and try to put the 20th century fully to bed. Now, to bring this back to Cody, and let's say he is a representative of the Vengeful Son. It's really interesting to bring The Rock back and have The Rock be bringing a character from the 90s back during the Attitude Era, which is when Vince McMahon was really the most active in a lot of those storylines we kind of detailed in the start of this. And it'd be normally something you'd want to avoid. Like, let's not talk about that at all. Attitude, who, what, right? There was Stone Cold Steve Austin, there's a Rock, and a blah, 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 blah. And by making The Rock back to that character, normally you would think that it's somehow shining a light on that. But if you can reform it, and if you can essentially have the big giant good guy defeat the big giant bad guy, who is a representative of those times that you kind of want to put to bed and forget about, thematically, ritualistically, that's what you're doing. And that is the Vengeful Son. The Vengeful Son will put to rest the betrayals of the last 120 years of humanity, or will at least try to. I think that's what it's being called in action to do.
And it's such an interesting way to paste that on top of the WWE storyline. You could even see this as Cody, putting away the last 120 years of the old guard of wrestling, of the old establishment of wrestling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're not going to say this in storyline. I think the energy of the old guard is, of course, Vince McMahon. But maybe the stand-in for that is, in this case, The Rock and the Samoan bloodline, The Rock, I wouldn't say he had a silver spoon in his mouth or anything like that, but he actually was, from all accounts, like pretty broke when he was breaking into the business, but he has the lineage of wrestling. You could certainly portray him as just being, served up as the Simba of wrestling. In real life, he certainly seemingly did really work really hard to get where he is. But point being, who cares about real life? We're talking kayfabe, we're talking blurring the lines. And he is, in many ways, the perfect representation now, because now not only does he have that wrestling lineage, but you add on literal highest paid actor in Hollywood. He is as Hollywood as can be. Gets involved in politics, like endorsed Joe Biden, has this, there's so many real life aspects that make The Rock villain, so villainous in the political way you describe, where things will go more right wing, where the political energy is leaning against the old guard and the old establishment. And The Rock, whether by, you know, by creative genius or not, is the perfect person to fulfill this role, that role. And Cody, in many ways, is the perfect person to, you know, to be usurping it, because, I mean, if nothing else, then because of that literal son tie-in. I mean, he is literally a vengeful son. It's the entire purpose of his character. And I can't think that that's not coincidence that this character is rising up at this particular time. And by not coincidence, I don't mean that they're writing it out. I just mean not coincidental of the spirit of the age, as you described.
Let's veer this into something really interesting. I just connected something, so bear with. Matt Erickson, the Mighty Matt Erickson from the Kick and Peel podcast. You two should be talking.
Yes, we do. And we're actually planning a podcast next month. Yeah.
Good. PayPal Mafia, something that Matt and I have kind of talked about. I gave him a sketch of an idea and he just ran with it and did and completed every single touchdown imaginable with the concept. And it's getting a lot of eyes on him, which is great. Well-deserved. Matt, I can't say enough good things about Matt. Okay, so I was just shining his shoes without getting too gay about this.
Shoes have been shined.
One of the things that we figured out with the PayPal Mafia, or we're unveiling PayPal Mafia Friend or Fed, will be dropping March 1st, by the way. One of the things that has been kind of revelatory in this is how a lot of roads lead back to Peter Thiel. Now, Peter Thiel is a very interesting human being. Peter Thiel was a student under René Girard. And René Girard was the, let's say, the inventor or the creator, as you will, of mimetic theory. And mimetic theory, there's lots of things within mimetic theory, but a lot of it has to do with desires and understanding how humans model each other after other people. So, I won't get into Girardian stuff unless we need to, but this is my operating theory.
On that, though, what is more mimetic than wrestling?
Everyone
what
wants
creates
a belt?
More literal memes than wrestling? I mean, wrestling memes are Everyone probably my belt. Favorite brand of meme.
Yeah, exactly. But it's right there, right? The belt is the desire, the externalized desire. Why does everyone want the belt? Well, it's because it's the belt, and you have right. It's top of the hierarchy, and it's like why? But it's a gimmick, right? Like everyone knows it's a gimmick.
But in this universe, it's the greatest thing you can accomplish. So that's all that matters.
Exactly. So you have Peter Thiel, who's I think a jiu-jitsu master in mimetics, and he's pulling a lot. I think he's a nexus point for all these nodes. This branches into something that Orrin McIntyre and Academic Agent are going back and forth about whether the woke will be put away or something like that. My theory is this, is that the woke will transition or be transformed into what I'm calling the neo-trads. It's terms that's out there, but I'm defining it as sort of like, it's going to be like you take the same, all the progressive energy, but you make it into 1950s. So you know, it's not like, so pride parades will calm down. It's not like we're going to be anti-homosexual. It'll just be more like, make it more somber, make it more respectable, put them in sweater vests and they can still buy children, you know, like that's fine. Dave Rubin's going to be a poster child for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the same progressive ideas, but remodeled and represented in a way that even right-wing conservatives will be at least less allergic to.
All right. There are baby buyers, so they're all right.
Right. When you look into Peter Thiel, that's Peter Thiel. What I'm describing, that kind of mimetic model, that's Peter Thiel.
And by the way, there's a tie-in here, because Peter Thiel funded Hulk Hogan's lawsuit which basically is what destroyed Gawker.
Uh-huh.
Vengefully, you could say.
So, vengefully, very vengefully. So, and I look, I love Peter Thiel, just so everyone knows. Okay. So Peter, if you're listening to this, love you, man. We should talk. We should work together. I'm on board. Right. Please don't gawker me, But I got nothing, man. Like, don't take my nothing away.
Don't gawk me, bro.
Right, exactly. Don't gawk me, bro. So now the interesting thing is, I think if you look at Cody Rhodes, he's a neo-trad. He comes in suits, very presentable, right? What's his politics? We don't know. Doesn't matter. He's just good. He's just a good guy. He's just the good. He's the goodest. So
just wants to know what you want to talk about.
Yeah. Right? Very. If everyone's talking about Rock running for president, I think Cody Rhodes could run for president and win. Any thoughts?
The only problem with that, I have a hard time, but you know, maybe times are changing and maybe it will be appropriate for this. I have a hard time with a president with a big neck tattoo. That's going to be a tough one.
That can be removed.
You know, what's funny. I heard him talk about that tattoo, and originally like in his mind, it was going to be like 1/8 of the size. It was going to be like this small little tattoo on his neck, but instead it's his entire neck. So, but you know, it becomes synonymous with it. But yeah, I mean, look, even that tattoo is very representative of the age. It's like this angry sort of American flag skull. It's like, and he is the American nightmare. I mean, maybe that is just an appropriate gimmick for the age as well. What is more of a counter to the last 120 years when all we've been told about is the American dream, buy your house, max out your 401k, blah, 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 blah. Well, maybe he is the one to say, no, this is an American nightmare. I'm the American nightmare, and I'm the one that's going to wipe this all out. Now, he said nothing like this, but we're making these connections of how, probably unbeknownst to even Cody Rhodes, his character is so perfect for this time.
Well, all he does is exalt his father and talk about his father at the drop of a dime, and you know, is always near tears when he's talking about his dad, whose name was the American Dream, who always was the son of a plumber, who always presented himself in cowboy boots and a cowboy hat and you know, torn off vests and that kind of stuff. And there's Cody Rhodes coming in with a million-dollar haircut, really, you know, $2 million suits, a very affable, presentable thing, the same with his father, but no discernible accent, and calls himself with a big giant tattoo. His father never had a tattoo, as far as I can remember, and is the inversion of his father. And one of the things we said in DMs, and we will end with this, Mark.
His father's a bit, you know, for context, people haven't seen Dusty Rhodes. His father is he's not a fit man. He looks like a chubby plumber, like a guy that you would just like run into at the bar, getting into a brawl or something like that. Whereas Cody is about as fit as you can be.
Yeah. Let me see here's Dusty. If I can get this supersized.
A computer took your job, daddy.
Computer took my job, daddy. Funky like a monkey. I can't get this fixed. Anyways, I'm not doing tech stuff right now. My brain's not there. Yeah, you look it up on Google, especially the polka dot Dusty Rhodes from the WWE days. It's, you know, the contrast is very, very, very stark. Let's end on this, Mark. You're a father, essentially. I'm a father. Now we're raising children. And one of the things I said in DMs is that wrestling is really generational, and it's something that Vince McMahon figured out, that if you get the kids, then the kids, when they grow up, mm-hmm. will want to pass the wrestling down to
their kids. What a brilliant son of a bitch. Cause here we are.
Right. It substantiates the model. I've heard this on podcasts before. They realize like there's a drop off period, right? Like, you know, you grow up, you grow out of it. Not obviously not us, but like most well-adjusted human beings stop watching for a period of time.
It's like, it's leveled up with this generation too, because like when you're a kid and you are into wrestling, like your dad has money to like go, like my dad would take me to wrestling events and that sort of thing. But your dad's not going to be the super fan. He's just doing something to like, you know, have fun with a son and take a son to something. But me 30 years later, I'm the super fan. Like I'm the one that will and have in the past spent money to go to WrestleMania, spent hundreds of dollars on tickets, you know, and whatnot. My dad would have never done that. So like actually my early fanhood, however they captured that, is like a force multiplier, because now decades later, the profit they get from me and people like me is exponentially more than if they just say like had just tried to capture my dad himself at the time, just the working man himself. They had to capture the kids, which is why Vince was so brilliant creating all these cartoony characters that so many of us roll our eyes at now, but we didn't roll our eyes then. They captured our attention then, and you know, here we are now.
Somewhere out there, there's a kid, there's a grown man who cites Duke the Dumpster Droese as his favorite wrestler growing up.
I don't know if that's
guaranteed. There's got to be one. Find me this man. Find me this man. So we can smack some sense into him. But that's not Duke's fault. Yeah, no, exactly. If you look at in the Attitude Era, before the Attitude Era, everything was very PG and everyone was playing these dumb roles that were really good for action figures, which is kind of one of the reasons why he was doing it. Because he was in this action figure business with Mattel. Then he has to pivot to the Attitude Era to save the business because the WCW is undercutting him and doing this other program. They go through that period into the Ruthless Aggression Era. But that transitions into a PG era again, because I think they realize like we're losing the kids. Like you can't bring your kid to an Attitude Era show. You can, but it's got to be a bit older. You're not bringing your 8-year-old there, right? Even your 12-year-old, you're like, this is pretty difficult to watch. And they've reversed that trend. Now they're getting into this. So one thing you said when in the Cyprian show is that you think with the Netflix deal, things will get a lot more mature. And that might be true. But I would almost be surprised. I think they're going to keep it pretty PG-13, like more mature than maybe what it is on the USA Network. But I don't think it's going to get hyper mature because they don't want to lose the kids.
The only reason I don't think that's true is because this isn't the 80s or even the 90s or even the 2000s anymore. And I think that there has been just a big shift in how not only the media approaches this sort of thing, but I think even parents are kind of like, become a lot more whatever about some basic violence and stuff like that. I mean, teenagers watch Squid Game, teenagers watch stuff that they might not have watched. I mean, I'm not making a judgment, value judgment here. I'm just stating the plain truth. I don't think it's as big of a deal. And the only reason the PG thing stuck around so long is because of the federal regulations involving broadcast stuff and to an extent because of concerns about sponsors and whatnot. So that's a big part of being on the USA Network is that, they get paid from USA, but USA gets paid from sponsors. So if the sponsors are a problem, then the deal becomes a problem. This is very different, at least when it comes to Raw. They don't have to worry about sponsors at all. Now, Netflix may, monetize it in their own way and have ads on free, who knows what they do. But the point is the deal has not contingent on any sponsors. The deal is just between Netflix and WWE. And we know Netflix is not afraid of higher end content. And the fact that on this press conference where they did this big angle between Cody and The Rock and there was a big slap to the face of Cody Rhodes. That was supposed to be like the real moment, which obviously wasn't real. But in the back, they showed an interview with Triple H and The Rock is coming by and he starts dropping F-bombs on Triple H, and Triple H dropping F-bombs back at him. He's like, you better fucking fix this. And that's like not even the character as The Rock is the interesting thing about that. Cause even when The Rock comes back out on Raw or on SmackDown last week, he is playing Hollywood heel Rock character, but he still wasn't playing chairman of the board, whatever character, but he kind of was in that segment, which I find so interesting that while they're blurring lines, they're also like reminding us of lines in a sense too. But the point is they were dropping a bunch of F-bombs in that press conference. And I do think that, I don't know if they're going to go out of their way to make it a gore fest or anything like this, or hypersexual like they did in the Attitude Era. I don't think it's going to go like that for the same reasons. I don't think they want to turn parents off. Like, they're not going to make it a porn show and just, to something nobody can watch. But I do think it's going to get more mature. And I do think there's going to be a lot more tie-ins to, like Vin was saying, whatever's popular on Netflix, like, dude, like what has been more of a tie-in product than wrestling in life? I mean, they love tie-ins. So now they're directly tied in with this entire brand. I think we are going to see a lot more mature stuff, a lot more tie-ins, but probably a lot of stuff is going to be cringy and maybe some stuff that'll be cool. I don't know. I'm waiting for the Squid Game, War Games presents the Squid Game match or something like that.
Do you think it's even possible? We'll get into predictions to round it out. And we'll get you out of here, Mark. Thank you again for coming on. Appreciate it, man. Thing. This is like, people don't understand. We've been talking about doing this thing for months.
We didn't even know whose show it was going to be till we started.
We didn't even know whose show it was going to be. I thought it was your show, my show, whose show? I don't know. Show. Netflix, buy us. We come cheap. $1 billion would be fine. We'll settle for that. Okay, predictions. Like, let's think of this. Do you think that they will try to recreate the Vince McMahon Stone Cold feud with The Rock and Cody? Breath of the Rock being Vince in this scenario, and Cody being Stone Cold stand-in. Just obviously, look, obviously the characters are different. It's going to be a different flavor or some of that, but structurally, that could be something they're maybe setting up. Because that means that The Rock doesn't have to do a lot of in-ring work, which is kind of what they're probably going to protect him, try to protect him from.
When this first went down and they did the press conference where The Rock kind of said, oh, you're going to get it whether you like it or not, and kind of like portrayed almost the board member character when he was sniping at Triple H, I thought they were going to immediately lean into that as the story. It seems like they didn't lean quite into that. Maybe that part is going to be more less on the nose and more just something we all know that ends up playing into our emotions more than it does directly in the storyline way. But I would love to see that. Now, it wouldn't be a direct recreation, like you said, because I think the energy is different now. And that was that was such a 90s thing, like working hard, man, pissed off at his dad, you know, pissed off at his boss and whatnot. But I think that the elements are there to make it the set. That's why. And The Rock did say, like, you know, he said, I'm all about the long game. I'm looking big. And if that's the case, then the big long game would really be like The Rock representative of the sort of the old guard who is holding on to power and holding on to their old way of life, which in the wrestling sense can include like the entire bloodline. Like you saw this, you know, giant poster, like there's and then the counterforce to that could be Cody Rhodes and friends, which might even include the Nightmare family, you know, his brother Dustin maybe coming back, some of the people he's trained, because there he had like a real life sort of training thing in real life, and a lot of those guys ended up in AEW. Maybe some of the Nightmare family comes into play here, or the concept of it. Maybe it's guys that are more popular, like a Jey Uso, a Sami Zayn. There's definitely like enough there that there can that the general, because in the Attitude area, it became like at some point it wasn't just about one feud. It was like the entire organization was in chaos. There were faction wars. There was the corporation, the corporate ministry, like all this stuff going on. So I think we might see like a more chaotic version of that where it's less like a direct, like this group against that group, and maybe more in a meta way, maybe more in a way that the audience senses these are the old guard. These are the ones that are, you know, these are the ones that basically did the 2008 crash for all intents and purposes. These are the ones that did COVID, you know, whatever you want to call it. That's those guys. And maybe there's this other group of, which might in the 80s be like more of the working man wrestlers that could represent this sort of other side of things, which could be like a Cody, even though he's not dressed as like an 80s working man. To us, he kind of is, you know, he is dressed like a Gen Xer going to work, you know, putting on his suit or what have you, or like a Sami Zayn or a Kevin Owens, guys that are just perfect for that role. So I think it could be a storyline. It's unclear if they're going to be that on the nose about it, though, but I'd like to see that. I'd like to see full on, I mean, corporate Rock as the chairman of the board coming out, overruling Triple H, you know, making his own decrees and really pushing him around. It doesn't seem like they've gone all the way that way yet. So it remains to be seen.
I think the reason why I think that it's much more likely than not is that they're going to take that superhuman, like a superhero energy and transfer to wrestling. They already have hired on a whole bunch of Marvel, like some of the more better Marvel writers from the Infinity War and all that kind of stuff days over. And I think it's what's most likely is you're going to start seeing like Cody Rhodes be Captain America, you know, he'll have his Avengers versus, you know, Rock's Thanos. And instead of making it superheroes, because it won't be superheroes in costumes, it'll be wrestlers.
God, Cody would be such a great actual Captain America. I mean, I could actually see him as Captain America too. But that's because he is essentially the All American, even though he's the American Nightmare. He's the All American of this age of America.
Yeah, and that's why he works as a vengeful son as well. All right, quick predictions. We have Elimination Chamber coming up. It's actually going to be in Perth, just not too far from me. I am not going because I looked at the tickets and I was like, I can't afford that. Are you nuts?
Dude, like, I didn't even go to the Royal Rumble, which is here in St. Pete, about an hour from my house, because tickets were just absurd and it's not that great a stadium. So I was like, you know what? For saving a couple $100, I'm going to watch this on Peacock and with a big TV. And, you know, I mean, so, and I love going to live wrestling, but I couldn't justify the price.
That was it. I mean, I didn't really have anyone to go with, and my daughter's too young, and she's kind of like, she even gets a little squirrely when I have it on TV. So it's like, it's not going to be fun for her. The cheapest ticket was $50 and like the nosebleed. I'm like, so I'm going to pay $50 to watch it on a big screen. I can watch it on the big screen at home and not leave my house, which is
for the Rumble. The nosebleeds were $150. Like the lowest you could spend was $150 for the worst seats. I'm like, nah. Dude, I've spent some decent money for good seats before, but I'm not going to spend decent money for terrible seats, and I'm not going to spend absurd money for decent seats either. So it's just, and that's part of this too. I think wrestling sadly is going to become more like the NFL, or more like, you know, WrestleMania is going to become more like the Super Bowl, where it isn't really affordable for the everyday man. And it's more, we're packing boxes with corporate sponsors. The Netflix guy's got a suite. These guys got a suite. This whole front row is taken up by, you know, all these celebrities. And I think it is going to be, I mean, yeah, house shows and whatnot, it will remain somewhat affordable because you got to fill the seats for that stuff. But I think for these bigger events, like, I mean, if someone like me is not going to the Royal Rumble, I mean, I could have afforded it, quote unquote, but you know, it just didn't make economic sense for me when it's like, you know, I can literally just sit here in the comfort of my home and enjoy a better view. Cause that's the other thing too. It's not, some stadiums are better than others. It's not a great stadium for the view. So, I don't know where I was going.
So Elimination Chamber, the big thing is the winner of the Elimination Chamber, the men's anyways, is going to be challenging Seth Rollins, for the belt. I think Seth Rollins is going to have to lose at WrestleMania. Oh, actually maybe not now. I don't know. It's up in the air. At first I thought he was going to have to lose because he had to go do the press junket for Captain America, the new Captain America movie that's coming out that he was in, but apparently he's been cut out of that movie because of all those massive reshoots. So
yeah.
But he probably deserves a little time off anyways. I think this has been decided now. Who's your top pick? Who do you think is going to be Seth going against Seth Rollins for the big belt?
Well, I will use this time.
The second big belt.
I'll use this moment to plug a new project that it's so new. It's not even launched yet, but within this week, maybe by the time this is out there and people are watching it tomorrow, some of these might be up. I just got brought on to become a commentator for Ringside Intel. They do both wrestling and MMA. I'll be doing more on the wrestling side, and we're just fixing some graphics and stuff up, whatnot. We're hoping for me to get some predictions, some Elimination Chamber prediction videos up in this week. So whenever you find this, not only find my Twitter at Mark Clare Show, you can find at Ringside Intel. There's not much there yet. It's going to be a brand new YouTube channel. We're going to be launching this thing basically from scratch. So you'll see all my predictions there, but don't worry, I'm not going to hold back on you. I'll give them to you here as well. So I think the men's match In some ways there's only one person that can win this. And I think originally it was probably supposed to be Punk because he didn't win the Rumble and he was going to headline Mania, most likely against Seth. A lot of things have changed since then. Seth being injured seems like he's still going to compete at Mania, but he is injured and who knows if he's going to compete at Mania to get through this and then need more time off or what. But really who has emerged in these last few months, more so than almost anyone else right now, who I think when I look at this lineup, almost has to win the match. And there's one other option I can see that I'll get to, but I'm 95% on Drew McIntyre on this one. Drew's character has been just
my man,
absolutely incredible. And he is really taking it up. Speaking of memetic, this dude knows how to tweet. This guy knows how to use Twitter. He created memes out of ending CM Punk's career. You know, cause they storyline sort of half attributed the injury to McIntyre attacking him. So that's a built-in feud when he gets back. And his heel character has just been phenomenal. And what's great about his heel character and what makes it so effective and really in many ways sort of representative of the Vengeful Sun spirit as well, he is telling the truth about everything. He's saying, I got screwed by the Bloodline, this is bullshit, everyone knows how their matches are going to end, it's with the Bloodline interfering. And it's saying a true thing to justify his own behavior, to justify, well, if I don't act this way, if I don't take whatever, if I don't do whatever I have to do to win, well, I'm going to get left behind in this world. So, oh, well, yeah, I got to become just like them or even worse. And his attempts, every time he attempts to do something sort of the right way, he falls a little short. So he had a clean match with Seth once and lost clean. Then he had a match where he almost kind of beat Seth, but he had a moment of weakness and kind of like, you know, he hesitated for a moment when he could have taken him out and then lost clean. Then he got so overzealous with Seth that he actually, you know, he pulled his leg all the way onto the rope and lost the match because of that. So he's lost against Seth, I think, three times on TV leading up to this, which normally spells the end of a character, end of a run anyway, and he moves on to something else. All right, you lost the feud, bro. But he has kept up his character and kept upping his game every single week. I mean, this is the most I've ever enjoyed Drew McIntyre on screen. I've always thought he's a pretty good worker, especially in this later run of his, but by far the most I've ever enjoyed his run. And to me, he's got to win the Elimination Chamber, because I'm not really sure. Well, I think I know where he'll go if he doesn't, or even if he does. But to me, that's where the storyline is going. It's all about him winning this title and being proven right. And now that Punk is not going to be around for WrestleMania, I mean, the door is wide open and the ready-made feud is already set up. So when Punk does return, because I have a feeling this is not going to be more than maybe a 3 or 4 month thing, he's got that built-in feud with McIntyre. Why not have it be for the title? So Drew is definitely my pick here. I hesitate for one reason and one reason only. There is a little bit of an X factor here, is that what I can't see is Drew and Seth one-on-one again. They've done that too many times. So I think if Drew wins, there is a twist to this in some way. And the twist could be a couple different ways, one of which might actually involve Drew losing this match somehow. But I could see Drew winning the chamber. I could see Drew winning the chamber, and then somehow Sami Zayn works his way into that match, and I'm not sure how, but he has kind of had this feud with McIntyre in the background. Sammy's been on a losing streak, but he keeps referring to how he's going to come back and win a title. He's going to show everybody he's worthy of being a champion. I don't imagine they're saying that for no reason at all. It doesn't mean it's for Mania. Maybe this is a post-Mania thing that they're even laying the seeds for, but there's something there with Drew and Sammy that's not finished. So either, now if Drew doesn't win the match, I think it will be because Sammy, even though he said he's done with Drew, it's going to be because Sammy actually kind of like distracts him in some way in the chamber and actually costs him the match. And that's what leads to them finally blowing off their feud at Mania. But I just can't see taking Drew out of the title picture when he's this hot. I just can't see him having a almost just a feud only match with Sammy right now. So I do think Drew, the alternative being perhaps Randy Orton wins, because he's the only other one on this list I could see winning. Although they have done a job of putting six credible guys in there. I mean, there's not one guy I can't see Lashley winning because of his current storyline. I can't see LA Knight winning, but they're all main eventers. They're all guys that can very legitimately be seen as someone to win the match. The only other thing I could see is possibly Orton winning if maybe Sammy screws Drew out of the match somehow. I think Logan Paul and Owens are going to cancel each other out. They're not done with their feud. Now, I don't know if that means they finish it at Mania or if there's another match in between. And there could also be the seeds planted for possibly an LA Knight Logan Paul feud, which has been rumored going to Mania.
I think that's the money.
But I don't think any of those guys are going to win. I think they're all going to be in the mix with each other in some way, shape, or form here. So to me, I mean, the only real possible winners are Drew and Orton. And if Orton wins, I cannot see Orton and Seth as a main event match either. Really, it doesn't. Two faces doesn't really seem. So I think if that is the case, somehow Drew finds his way into the match anyway, possibly through the very, very defunct and forgotten Money in the Bank that has been sitting on Damian Priest. I could see Drew somehow getting that from him, because Drew has kind of had this feud ongoing with just Damian Priest, not so much with all of Judgment Day. So perhaps if he doesn't win the chamber, he somehow wins the Money in the Bank away from Damian Priest and puts himself into that match. Because I could see him doing doing what Seth did and being the first person. Well, right. He wouldn't be the first anymore, but Seth won his title by inserting himself into a match, turning it into a triple threat, and using the Money in the Bank. I could see Drew almost throwing it in Seth's face that he's won the title the same way. But that takes a few complicated steps of storyline that I'm not sure they're really going to do. That's a little fantasy booking thing. More likely, I think we just see Drew win this match, and he deserves to. I mean, he's been my favorite thing on WWE TV in the last few months.
So in another prediction, and of course now everyone's got to go check out this new venture you're doing. Once it's out, let me know. I will signal boost you to from the rafters, sir. My humble shack shall sing thy praises and put it out there into the internets. I guess the last prediction we'll do, and we'll wrap this up, is a prediction for WrestleMania. So it looks like, as of right now, it's going to be Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns. Do they screw Cody again? Or does he finally win the big giant belt? And then they maybe do a dusty finish afterwards, or what are your thoughts?
Oh, man, a dusty finish would be something else. My money is on Cody finally winning. I think they got to do it now. I mean, it was risky enough to not do it last year, but I'm on board with giving him the year of adversity, having him screwed out of the title, having the bloodline screw him. But I think you just got to pull the trigger on him at this point, because at some point a loser loses too much. He's now a loser, and Cody does not have that aura of him at all. He lost this past Monday to Drew just with bloodline interference, almost reminding us, look what's going to happen. The bloodline interferes, Cody loses. I think that's intentional. I think it's to set our expectations that he could get screwed again. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they've got to give us the feel good WrestleMania moment this time. We haven't not had a feel good WrestleMania ending in a number of years, unless you're counting night one, Sammy and Kevin winning. Look, those are main events to me. The end of night two is the real main event to WrestleMania. That's what we all know is the main event to WrestleMania. And the last several years, last 3 years have been Roman wins, Roman wins, Roman wins. It's time for something new. That being said, there's this part of me that wonders, do they want him to beat Hulk Hogan's streak? Because not streak, but his record, because speaking of vengeful son and putting away the old guard, what is the old guard? Maybe even more so than Vince in the sort of a meta way is Hulk Hogan. Maybe you just got to put that racist off the record books. And it wouldn't totally shock me if Roman wins. That's what I'll say. If Roman wins, he's not losing till he passes Hogan. I hope that's not what they do, because Cody winning at this point is the better storyline. It is time to move on. The bloodline thing has gotten stale, has gotten old. They can move into bloodline 2.0 storyline, which can be more of a Rock Roman feud maybe. But I just, you can't do this to Cody again. If you're serious about him being your guy. And they are, and they should be, because realistically, in terms of active performers, he is the most popular, the best, and there's just no comparison. He is the next John Cena. The Rock is not the next John Cena, you know? Roman Reigns is not the next John Cena. They tried to make him the next John Cena, and that didn't work. Cody is, and I think it's time to just recognize that. Eventually, you got to crown the champ, so crown the champ.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, the Hulk Hogan thing. That was my concern. I'm like, well, you
it's
know
still
what?
My concern.
I
think if Vince, trust me, it's my concern.
If Vince was still in creative, definitely that's what they would do. And I'm not ruling out the fact that Cody wins at 40 and then they do a Dusky finish and take it off him the money.
I wouldn't rule it out either.
I'm not discounting that.
I wouldn't rule it out either. I wouldn't either. But and The Rock could be the one to do it. He could say, as chairman of the board, but I actually suspect that The Rock will either it was a swerve. You know, there's theories that the whole Rock and Cody feuding is all just a storyline swerve where Rock is going to actually fight off the bloodline in the end or something like that. Or he will use his power of the chairman of the board to make himself the special referee. But then in the end, he actually won't screw Cody. He'll actually like prevent Solo Sikoa from interfering and let Cody win. Either way, I think it's possible we'll see a very Attitude Era type main event in terms of like people trying to interfere, other people interfering to run them off. Like, I think we might see a lot of callbacks to like anyone who the bloodline has screwed, maybe like fighting off Jimmy Uso, fighting off Solo Sikoa. But in the end of the day, I think that final moment is going to be one-on-one. It's going to be because they've eliminated the obstacles. And finally, Cody gets Roman one-on-one, whether it's like The Rock taking over as the ref or just a regular ref comes in. Cody just gives him the crossroads three times and pins the motherfucker, and we just move on. And the vengeful son gets his victory.
I will pop. I will pop. I will pop beyond pops.
Yeah.
Because I was ready to pop last year. Yeah. I was primed and set. Because after I popped so damn bad with Owen and Zane, Sammy, like I popped hard, man. It was almost embarrassing. And, because I remember during the Elimination Chamber when they were in Montreal, and Sammy was doing all those shows, and I was tearing up. I was like, "There's no."
And here's why. Here's why I'll pop so hard if he wins, and why it's so. This whole thing is so effective. If I pop hard for Cody winning, legitimately, a large part of me is actually popping hard for Cody Runnels. Is actually popping hard for him. Like what he's done in his career is awesome. Like he took like. The WWE just tried to make him whatever other character, Stardust, this and that. And he said, you know what? I'm going to give up this money, leave, go work the Indies, go work Ring of Honor. Those guys, this is not Tony Khan's Ring of Honor back then. Those guys didn't make anything. Like, I mean, maybe Cody made a little more because he's coming from the WWE. So he's probably a headliner from them off the bat. Anyway, he could have made a lot more staying in wrestling. I mean, he asked for his release from WWE so he could go work the Indies, so he could work in Japan, so he could learn a bunch of different styles, so he could develop this American Nightmare character, which is then what, and then he founded AEW, and then WWE saw what he did, and Cody made so much of himself. himself that they paid him millions of dollars to come be that character when they never were giving him that kind of money before. It's an impressive fucking story. It's an awesome story. And he should have won last year, and he shouldn't be screwed out of the main event by the Rock. So if all this culminates in me popping even harder for that moment, bravo, you got me.
Yeah, exactly.
But man, okay. if they deflate it again, I don't know. I mean, at some point, you can't deflate the ending 3 years in a row. Roman was still pretty hot the other years. I can justify him beating Edge and Daniel Bryan in the beginning of his run. I can justify him beating Brock Lesnar. No one needs to see Brock win again. I guess I can justify him beating Cody the first time to advance this storyline. No more. It's got to be over. No, it has to end here.
If Cody doesn't win,
it's 40
or whatever, then it's just like you might as well go back to AEW. This point, like,
and there's really no one credible except The Rock, I guess, to challenge Roman anymore. I mean, you gotta move, you gotta give it to Cody. And from Cody, I mean, there's feuds galore available.
Oh yeah, for sure. Okay, Mark, thank you again.
Thank
Money
you.
Mark Claire, pitch everything you got and we will wrap this up.
All right, well, eventually you'll be able to find me doing some new wrestling related content if you enjoyed this today over at Ringside Intel on YouTube, and you can follow that channel at Ringside Intel. My own channel on X is at Mark Claire Show, M-A-R-C. There's no K in my name, friends. M-A-R-C-C-L-A-I-R, Mark Claire Show. You can also find the Mark Claire Show wherever podcasts are found, and all the video platforms you can dream of, YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey, the whole deal. I just get everything anywhere and let people pick their poison and see where I don't get banned from first. So, and let's see, I also do some comic book related commentary while we're mentioning things over at Bounding into Comics. So, that's one thing that's been pretty cool about this past year is that, yes, I've been very busy. I've had my hand in a lot of things. I'm hustling galore to make things work out here. And we're still sort of in very much starting a new life mode, even though it's been like a year and a half. We started from zero essentially. So it's been a lot, but even though I'm doing a lot, I'm getting these unique opportunities to speak about things and just give my opinion on things that I've loved since I was a kid, comics and pro wrestling being two of my greatest loves since I was a child. And now people pay me to talk about them. And that's pretty cool. So I'm hoping to expand what I do in that side of things. So anybody that wants to go check that stuff out, give the likes, the shares, any way you can show that bringing me on as a commentator on this provides fruits and provides more clicks and downloads, the more of that I'll get to be able to do as well. So I appreciate that too.
And many years, Mark, you're one of my favorites, man. Have
Same
been
Jason.
For a bit. You know, I didn't follow you during the Lions of Liberty days because I never suffered from libertarianism.
Sorry, you got the better version. You got the better version of me. You're good.
Well, you know, since you made the switch over, man, your shows are absolute fire, and I enjoy each and every one of them. Each and
Thanks,
every
brother.
Week,
you're crushing it over there too.
We're doing what we can, man. I'm doing what I can. I don't know why I keep saying we. It's weird.
I think you're just used to it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for watching and enjoying. Share, like, subscribe, do the things, press the buttons, give us 5 stars, give us comments, give us money, give us accolades. I love you all, and we will talk to you again soon. Mark, stick around. I'll just do the outro.